Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
David Sachs and I have worked alongside each other for over a decade. His recent title is consultant to the SAJBD, and prior to that, he was associate director. He's also the editor of Jewish Affairs. David and I have exchanged views on anti-Semitism, Israel, books, sport, children, and so much more. He will soon be leaving for Israel, and I know that we will be chatting again when the opportunity arises. I thought we could spend the rest of our show getting just a slice of what makes David tick. David, welcome, and thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thanks, Sharissa. This could be my last time in your studio.
But not necessarily last time on air, because you will be in Israel, and I'm sure you'll have lots of stories for us that we'll be crossing live to you.
Oh, I hope so, yeah.
Good. Yeah. Exciting new step, David.
Exciting and scary. But yeah, I'm looking forward to it now.
David, sure, World Cup.
Yeah.
It's starting and the fever's already...
Yeah. I mean, of course, you think of the World Cup and you think of 2010 and how we had it here and how the board, all the projects we had to just get the community involved in the excitement of the whole event. Yeah.
And our makaraba. Don't forget our makaraba.
Oh, yeah. Double. Say what a makaraba is. It's those...
Yes.
They're mining headgear, whatever, but they would wear it to... fans would wear it to the games. So we created a Jewish makaraba, plus a mouse pad as well, which I still use.
Me too.
From that time, yeah.
But in the next few weeks, I am actually going to have people talking about the experience of the World Cup, hopefully get some previous soccer players. But I suppose, David, why we started with that is because you have become an expert on Jews in this country. Jewish Affairs, I know you've done issues around theater.
Law, medicine, Anglo-Boer War, of course, was my big favorite topic. I had a lot of fun, writing and publishing articles on that theme, Jews in the Boer War. Yeah.
We're going to get into the Boer War, but before we do, let's just talk a little bit about Jewish Affairs and what it's meant to you, and also kind of the stories, how you find them.
Yeah. Well, just to quickly, Jewish Affairs, it's been going for 85 years now. It started in 1941. Had various editors. I took over the editorship in mid-1999. I actually got my job at the board through Jewish Affairs because I submitted an article about a Jewish anti-apartheid activist, and that brought me to their attention, and they needed research in this area, and that's how I got into the board. So, I took over. I'm the longest serving editor now. Just keeping it going. It's only online now. It's only two issues a year. It used to be once a month. But hopefully it'll carry on for a lot longer, because it's really the only vehicle for carrying in-depth, lengthy, full-length studies of various aspects of Jewish culture and history, and particularly the South African Jewish community history. And when it's gone, you won't get it back. Okay, so I'm hopefully when I go to Israel, I'll continue as editor. We'll see how that goes.
I really hope so. I know it's been an absolute passion of yours putting it together. I know it's changed a lot. But, David, some of the stories are really somewhat historical. Mm. But you're just telling me now a little bit about something that has appeared in the last edition that is quite remarkable.
Yeah, it's always so nice to have follow-up articles to what has been published. About 2 years ago, maybe, we published a very long study about an episode in World War II. It was the torpedoing of an allied, of a POW, of a German ship, was an Italian ship, carrying about 1,500 POWs, hundreds of them, many of them South African. They'd been captured at Tobruk and places like that. And they were torpedoed by the British, as it happens. They were mostly saved, and it was largely through the heroism of a South African Jewish corporal by the name of Bernard Friedlander, who was a strong swimmer. He managed to swim to the shore. I mean, it took him like an hour because the seas were so choppy. I mean, it was but he managed to swim to shore with a line attached to him. So he managed to affix a line to the shore, and they were able to get, maybe they were all saved. They managed to get there via that rope. But there was, in that story, there was a German engineering officer. Yeah, the Italian, by the way, the Italian crew got on the boat and just sailed. You know, they buggered off. You know what Italians in World War II. You know. Anyway, they abandoned the ship, and then it took this German engineering officer, very skillfully, managed to steer the ship onto the rocks so that it didn't sink. And he was generally a powerhouse of just organizing things and just. In all the reminiscences of this episode, nobody wanted to know who he was, what happened to him after the war. And it's one of those mysteries of this affair. And we received a submission from a military historian in Australia who seems to have found out who he was. And so we published that.
Who was he?
I think his name was Hecht. I think a civilian naval officer, engineering officer on this ship. Even though it was an Italian ship, it had a German crew as well. And I think he was captured, and the trail goes cold after the war. We don't know what happened to him. But it's pretty sure, we established who this mystery man was.
Before we go back to Jewish affairs, I just also remembered that you were the expert on Jewish contribution to South Africa.
I wouldn't be the expert by any means. I mean, you, Milton Shane, Richard Mendelssohn, Adam Mendelssohn. I mean, the professional academics. But I've gained a very large working knowledge of in my 30 years, nearly 30 years at the board. I've picked up so much about the details about the Jewish community. I've just finished a book with Rabbi Moshe Silberhoft on he's a follow-up book on his travels around South Africa and Africa, the other African countries. And that's the launch is going to be, by the way, a few days before we leave. It's going to be at Great Park on the 8th of July. It's called The Traveling Rabbi, Journeys Continued. It was a wonderful project. It was a travel literature. We went to every part of the country, Mossel Bay in the south to Messina, very far north, beautiful. To Mombela, that's old Nelspruit, to Springbok in the far west, and everything in between. I think Amon Moshe will come onto Batya Bricker's show, because Batya is producing the book. So we're working together, just getting it finalized.
I'm sure that'll be amazing. David, let's go back to Jewish affairs. Do you have favorite story or a favorite edition?
Richard Mendelssohn, that's a very eminent historian. He and Milton Shane, they co-wrote a pictorial history of the Jewish community, which is I read it right through in every word. I mean, I don't often do that. He's actually going to talk at one of the launches of Moshe's book. He did an article. He started writing a book on Jews in the Boer War, on all sides. He never finished it. For some reason, it never came to fruition. He's written many other books, but he wrote a fascinating article about a Free State, a Bloemfontein Jewish family during the war. The famous Levasseur family, Baum and Levasseur, pioneers of Bloemfontein. They were there from the very beginning. And how it impacted on them. I don't know if you've ever read Gone with the Wind.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. And remember it was reminiscent of that, because the war news, they're in Atlanta and they're winning, and then the tide turns and the enemy are approaching, and it reminded me of that a great deal. It was. Richard wrote that. It was both a wonderful piece of social as well as military history. That's one of my favorite articles. But there are so many over the years. Our esteemed colleague Gwyn Schwerer is, I think she's written over 25 books or something.
Wow.
Or edited. I mean, she's indefatigable, and she always contributes on a wide range of subjects. She's just been the latest issue of Jewish Affairs has the connection between Sir Moses Montefiore, who the famous Jewish philanthropist, and he worked for the for the Jewish world. He was famous for it. He was knighted, I think. He, you know, one of the even before Zionism, he was helping to build the beginnings of the Yishuv in Ottoman Palestine, as it was then. And he had a Cape Town connection. The tiny Cape Town Jewish community, despite, you know, we're talking about a few score people. You know, it was really small, but they raised a lot of money. And around the country, they raised money for the causes that he was supporting in Israel and on behalf of the Jews in Syria, and then the whole Damascus blood libel case. So you saw this connection, even at those very early days, with a very assimilated and small community, and yet the roots of even of South African Zionism, were very much at work there. But the main part of the article, just by the way, just to finish it off, is that afterwards, some con man pretending to be the nephew of Montefiore came to Cape Town. He was Jewish, and he just defrauded one of the banks in a big way. Everyone loved him because he got all this money and he was just handing it out left and right. So this guy's fantastic. And then he was eventually arrested, and we don't know what happened to him in the end. But so it's a financial scandal, but also with the Montefiore link.
That's fascinating.
And that's what Gwen digs up. You know, she's fantastic.
You know what you've also just reminded me about is we're going to go at some point to the Anglo-Boer War, but before we do. The discovery of gold and diamonds in South Africa certainly brought a lot of Jewish names. And I remember when we celebrated 120th anniversary, we were trying to get 100 prominent people. It was really difficult because there were, you know.
This was Johannesburg, huh?
Johannesburg and Kimberley. Yeah, oh, yeah. But, I mean, Kimberley, obviously, older. But with kind of, while we tend to highlight the achievements, it was also quite a seedy Jewish, terrible, actually. And people don't talk about it. Maybe they're starting to talk about it now. Do you want to, like, spill the beans?
Yeah. They've been spilled. there was a Jewish criminal class in early Johannesburg, and they went really nasty. And they went, what a lot of them did was they would entice these young Jewish girls to come out to get married, and they'd force them into prostitution. Charles von Onselen, actually, you know, the historian, he wrote seminal works on this, and the best known is called The Fox and the Flies, about the very worst of one of these people. He even says he could have been Jack the Ripper, that he was a psychopath, and how he destroyed the life of many lives. But one person in particular, called Rachel Lasky, was her name, and there's a whole story about that. It appears in Moshe's book as well. And Van Onselen paid to have a stone put on her grave in the end. I mean, she went mad. He destroyed her. She spent the last 40 years of her life in an institution. And she never had a headstone on her grave. And Van Onselen paid for that.
Sure,
just as a kind of... Yeah,
yeah.
Well, three or four of the best talks I've ever heard. One of them was by Van Onselen talking about the Jewish underclass. It was fascinating.
So he was involved in prostitution. And I know it was innocent young women from Eastern European countries who thought they were coming here for a better life.
I mean, look, it happened in Argentina and the US as well. I mean, it wasn't just South Africa. But, they weren't all these captains of industry and machers and mayors and all these, the Jewish contribution too,
that sort of
stuff.
Yes.
Of course, there were some very nasty people as well. Bootleggers, but the prostitution, and it was hidden in the community histories because we were very in the early days. It was bad enough being we didn't want to draw attention to this. I mean, they were trying to clamp down on Jewish immigration anyway. But in recent times, we can that's why the Shane Mendelssohn book that talks about these things quite openly and. Listen, it's horrible, but it's also quite a bit more interesting than, about these goody-goody, sometimes you need a bit of a change. It's more human.
David, I don't know whether to take a quick break here, because I don't want to get into Herman Charles Bosman yet and then have to empty it. So let's take a break here. And then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about Herman Charles Bosman and the Anglo-Boer War. Gosh, I could talk for hours though.
Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
And I'm talking to my colleague David Sachs. And David, we're actually talking about the things we've been talking about over the two decades that we've worked together.
Yeah, and we could go on all day, you know, easily.
David, one of the things we have spoken about is Herman Charles Bosman.
Mm.
And he had a Jewish connection. Like so many, you know, like the Jewish community is so entrenched in South African history that it's almost impossible to pick up some thread and not connect it back to Jews, whether it be it sport, arts, culture, literature, whatever. And these are things I know you've written about, and I wish I had time. We could do a program on each topic alone. But let's talk a little bit about Herman Charles Bosman and his Jewish connection.
Yeah, it's something I always wanted to write about myself because, you know, I read a couple of biographies of him, one by Bernard Sachs, no relation, although the name was spelt the same. And that's L.B. Sachs's uncle.
Okay.
You know, and he was very involved in Jewish affairs, and he edited the Jewish Times, and a very close friend of Herman Charles Bosman, and he wrote the first biography of him. And just reading that, just the number of Jewish names that keep coming up, colleagues, friends, even I think he got involved with a Jewish woman who eventually broke up with him, and he wrote one of his nastiest short stories with about her, without naming her, obviously.
At least for that.
He was very involved in. He worked for the Jewish Times for a while as a sub editor, wrote a couple of very curious pieces about anti-Semitism. I mean, he, of course, being Bosman, he took a completely contrary view. He had his own view of life.
He
said, you know, how do you fight anti-Semitism? Don't deny it. Yes, we run the world. Yes, we do control. We do love money. Not just go away and leave us alone. So that was his idea. Just admit it. He had a completely unique way of looking at life that is a little upside down. And, one of the few authentic and certainly totally original geniuses, literary geniuses that South Africa produced. But one thing I like to make a point about, I like to make about Bosman is, although he's associated with the Groot Mariko, he spent, and of course those unforgettable stories that he wrote about that whole milieu, he immortalized it. But he only spent 6 months there. He was a Johannesburg boy. He was born here, grew up here, went to JP Boys, worked most of his life. He lived in Pietersburg as well for a while. But he was basically a Johannesburger, and a lot of his writings are on early Johannesburg, his essays, which have been published. He was a Johannesburg man, and of course he went to prison for, he was in prison for 6 years, I think, or was it four and a half, I don't remember how long he was there, wrote one of his that famous memoir, Cold Stone Jug, about his time in prison, was totally unique, unforgettable, they made it turn into a play, I think. I lived down the road from where the murder took place at one stage. It's in Bellevue, which is alongside Yeovil. We lived there for a while. One of the most interesting experiences I had, if I'm just may indulge, I met a guy when I was in my previous job, just arbitrarily, and he says, you know, and where does he live? He lives in Bellevue East. Oh, Bellevue East, of course. You know, by the way, that's where Herman Charles Bosman, you heard of Herman Charles Bosman? And he interrupted me and said, yep. I stay at that house, and I live in that room where the murder took place.
So just remind us, he killed his brother-in-law.
His brother-in-law in some fit of
rage.
Or panic, I don't know. He was a bit mad. You know, he wasn't entirely stable. He should never have been sentenced to death. It wasn't premeditated or anything. But, yeah, he killed his brother-in-law. And incredibly, this guy I just spoke to, he lives in that room. I've had a number of the experiences which I won't have time for, but that was one of them. And that was in Johannesburg. He went to, in prison. He went to Pretoria. He was held there for his sentence. Obviously, the death penalty was commuted.
Do you think Herman Charles Bosman has been recognized enough as an author?
You know, that's another thing that really bothers, always bothered me a bit, because in South Africa, yes, he really is revered. Most of what he's wrote has been republished. There are festivals about him and academics lecture about him, but it hasn't traveled overseas. Nobody knows about him. His papers, his whole collection, they're in Texas, the University of Texas in Austin, I think, Austin, Texas. They bought it after he died from his widow. And people have to go travel there to research him, you know. But he hasn't been recognized overseas at all. And he should be, because he really is an authentic genius, completely unique. And his short fiction, they really are masterpieces.
David, one of the things you and I did together was travel to Ladysmith for an Anglo-Boer War Memorial.
Yeah. Something I feel humbly grateful to have contributed to, because, you know, I used to visit battlefields for many years. It was...
Yeah, I'm just shaking my finger at you, because you were supposed to take me on a battlefield tour.
Yeah.
We spoke about that often.
Yeah. Well, we were going to go to Machersfontein outside Kimberley, which is an amazing battlefield. And you can find relics and shrapnel bullets, cartridge cases, still all over the place, because it's semi-desert there. It's not covered up by the grass. Anyway, it doesn't look like it's going to happen, which is sad. But I hope you do go yourself one day. But I used to prefer not going on guided tours. I used to like to go myself. I mean, once I traveled 12 and a half hours, I rode to Fort Beaufort.
Jeez.
All because I just had to see the frontier war. This isn't World War, this is the frontier wars. I had to go to the Waterkloof outside Fort Beaufort, where this whole lot of campaigns took place between the Xhosa and the British. I used to avidly read about those. I used to work for Museum Africa, and we had all these original watercolors and oil paintings by Thomas Baines, who was there. He sketched all these, and I just had to go there to be there and walk those grounds. Anyway, I spent about 20 years visiting battlefields, and I wrote this book on Jews and who fought for the Boers, called Boere Jode. It was based on the stuff in the Board's archives, largely. And it was a modest little book. It was self-published, but it sold quite well. And it brought me to the attention of the Ladysmith Siege Museum Trust. And through that, two little monuments have been put up to Jewish Boers. The first one was to the first Boer who was killed, Jewish Boer. He was killed in a skirmish outside Ladysmith in the beginning of the war. And the next one, which was one you attended, and it was a big event, remember?
It was pomp and ceremony and bands, and it was amazing.
The Piper's Lament and the whole military event. And that was to commemorate the Jews who died serving in the Boer forces. And I was very, very honored, you know, that these battlefields, which for me are like holy ground, they are holy ground, you know, they need to be treated with great reverence and respect. Men fought and died there. Many of them are buried there. And a fair number of them were Jewish. And now there's a little monument there that came about as a result of the book I wrote. And I'm gratified about that. My one problem is, as Moshe Silberhaft, he was there as well, pointed out, he says, look at the Hebrew. Because it's got Hebrew writing on the you know, and I think, you know. But the stonemason didn't realize that, you know, Hebrew's right to left, so it's back to front. The text is back to front, and it'll bother me till the day I die, I'm afraid.
Is there nothing that can be done? Is it too late?
It could be done.
I don't want it bothering you. David, I can't believe we've almost got to take our next break, but do we have one quick question before the break? And that is, because us Joburgers travel up and down Louis Botha, and it's such a main artery, I just thought, he had a Jewish connection as well. And I only learned about it because of you, my love for the Anglo-Boer War and subsequent history, came to the fore. And he was an incredible general.
Yeah, no, he was probably the greatest of the Boer generals.
And he was also close to the Jewish community, or certainly had a fondness for them.
In the area where he grew up, he had Jewish connections, farmers in those days. One of the stories I really like is during the siege of Ladysmith, I mean, there was this One of the Jews, he was a corporal, I think, and he fought right through the war. But he heard about another Jew who was sat in his tent the whole time, always reading the Bible, you know. So he went to check up on this little Yid. He wasn't reading the Bible; he was saying Tehillim because the British were coming, and he was terrified. And he had been conscripted, you see. And so this Jew, the other guy, went to Louis Buerta, and his name was Jacob Leberton, and said, "Listen, this guy's he's not doing any good for us. Yeah, let him go home." So they sent him home, and the British arrested him anyway, you know. And afterwards, he became mayor of Ermelo, but that was after the war.
Well,
yeah.
David, we have to take a break, but we will be back soon.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.
I'm Cherise Zephyr. This is Above Board, and I'm talking to my colleague, David Sachs. David was the associate director of the board and is current consultant to it, our anti-Semitism expert and author. But David, we were dabbling in South African history, but Jewish contribution to South Africa starts right at the earliest 1827? Yeah. What earliest Jew to South Africa?
Yeah, look, there was a sprinkling of Jews. Under the Dutch East Indian Company, you had to be a Protestant. You know, Jews couldn't settle here at all.
I don't know.
Only from the early 1800s. Some did, but they became Christians. So the Wessels family was originally Jewish, probably. But from the early 1800s, the British took over, and Jews began trickling in. And the first big, it wasn't really big, but the first consignment came with the 1820 settlers. In 1820, about 4,000 British settlers were brought out, and they settled in the Eastern Cape. And there were three Jewish families and a couple of individuals. And they became the nucleus, really, of an organized Jewish community later. We talk about some of the regrets I have in life. You know, they were quite prominent in Grahamstown. I went to Rhodes University. I lived in Grahamstown for 5 years. I mean, it was my town, you know. I loved every inch of it. I lived up at one stage in Diggs, over the road from the Catholic cemetery. And we used to go and visit it and take mind-changing substances and giggle at the tombstones, at the inscriptions, you know. the lowest form of life are students. I had no idea that a couple of hundred meters further on was the oldest Jewish cemetery in the country.
Wow.
You know, the first Jewish burial ever took place 1838. I didn't know about it. I mean, I would have spent hours there.
Do you know who it was?
Yeah, his name was Lion Benjamin. He was a Grahamstown storekeeper. He died in 1838. And several of the Jews, they applied to get a burial plot. So the first funeral under Jewish religious auspices took place not in Cape Town, but in Grahamstown. Other linkages. You know, next to him is buried Joshua Davis Norden, who was an 1820 settler. He died at the head of his men. He was a captain of the Grahamstown Yeomanry. So he was the first Jew to die in active service in South Africa. And there's a full description. The first description of a Jewish funeral is in the Grahamstown Journal of the time. You know, I didn't know about all this. I found out later, you know. So I wish I'd known when I was a student. I would have enjoyed it so much.
Maybe not, though. Your interest in that may have developed later, maybe, potentially.
I was still passionately Jewish. And it was such a Christian town. It was called the City of Saints because there are churches everywhere. And there's the one shul. It just would have made me feel a lot better to know that actually the Jewish link goes right back to the beginning.
David, we could talk about anti-Semitism. We could talk about Jews in communities. There is so much we could, but it is time to say goodbye. So I just want to say thank you so much for joining me today and indeed all our conversations that I have enjoyed. And I wish you...
Yeah, sure. I've always loved being on your show. I don't know how many times I've been in the studio, and we've just enjoyed ourselves. And hopefully, it's not for the last time.
I'm pretty certain it won't be. So we'll be watching you carefully, and you'll join us and tell us how you are doing.
Please go on.
Also, I just want to tell you that we're talking about anti-Semitism. If anybody feels that anything is anti-Semitic, please report it on our WhatsApp line 078-259-9663. 9417. If you want to know what the board is doing, you're always welcome to check out our social media pages. Before I wish you goodbye, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic for Adults offers convenient and professional care to help you manage health risks. Whether you are having your regular wellness checks, such as blood pressure or cholesterol, Dis-Chem Wellness Clinics offer you a broad range of health screening services, including female health screening with pap smears, family planning, and pregnancy screening. Fast, affordable, and with care. Find your nearest Dis-Chem Wellness Clinic inside. Dis-Chem Pharmacies. Better health starts here. Thanks to all of you for joining me. Thanks to Craig and Peterson for putting the show together. If there's anything you'd like to comment on, you're always welcome to send me an email on charisse@sajbd.org. Otherwise, until next week, I wish you all Shabbat Shalom.